Hello, and welcome to the inaugural Resilient Life podcast. Resilient Life is part of peakprosperity.com. It's where we focus on practical and actionable knowledge for building a better future. I'm your host, Adam Taggart, and today's guests are Scott Leonard and Matt Reynolds, co-founders of Indigenous Designs, an organic and fair trade clothing company. Most Americans don't think about where their clothing comes from beyond the retail store where they purchased it. But our choice of clothes has near as much social and environmental impact as choosing where our food comes from. Manufacturing textiles is a global multi-billion dollar industry, rife with health, humanitarian, and environmental abuses when done without respect for each of the stakeholders in the supply chain. The recent tragedy in Bangladesh, where hundreds perished in a collapsed factory, provides a stark example of this. But Scott and Matt know from firsthand experience that a better model, one more sustainable yet still affordable, is possible. It's called fair trade, and they've been helping to pioneer it at Indigenous for almost 20 years. I'm looking forward to learning more about this approach, as well as how we as individual consumers can make choices in support of fair trade when making purchases in the future. Scott, Matt, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Well, guys, thanks so much again for joining me. Let's start by giving our listeners a quick background of Indigenous Designs. What is its mission, and why did you start it in the first place?
Yeah, thanks, Adam. We set out over 15 years ago to make a difference primarily in women's lives in South America. So we create jobs in what's called the BOP, the base of the pyramid, working with economically marginalized communities to create these jobs using skills that the artisans have had for generations, elevating those skills to the marketplace. So we're primarily talking about knitting and crocheting skills that these artisans have, and we've been able to take them to market and be available in some of the most premium fashion outlets and stores and boutiques across the country.
I'll just add that, you know, it's really, there's a lot of passion behind the founding of Indigenous. Scott was an avid environmentalist and actually used to own a surf shop in Santa Cruz. And myself, I was an avid environmentalist and grew up with a deep love of South America, having lived there growing up, and always trying to find ways to bring green practices to business. And Scott and I joined forces back in 1994 and really had an ultimate mission to build a profitable fashion brand while empowering artisans and elevating them to a world-renowned status through what we call our Indigenous Fair Trade and Organic Production Model.
Well, I think it's a, you know, having seen your clothes on the stores here in the area where I live, it seems like you're definitely having some success in that. And I love the fact that it's combining that passion you talk about for better environmental practices with practices from a social and socioeconomic standpoint are helping the actual artisans that are truly doing the work. I don't really understand at all what goes into a shirt, say, when I go into the store to buy one. But, you know, I am familiar with the stories that we read about in the newspapers about some of the horrible human rights abuses that go on in a lot of these sort of, you know, factory sweatshops where a lot of the textiles are produced. Can you give me a better picture about what happens in the traditional supply chain where we read about these abuses, and then contrast that with the fair trade practice that you mentioned, and the difference that makes on obviously the lives of the artisans producing the textiles, but wherever else it creates benefits along the food chain?
Sure. Well, I'll start by saying that the certifications that are in place that are out there and that we use in the Indigenous supply chain truly save lives. And I'll give you two quick examples. One is when we talk about organic certification. We're not just talking about what you're putting against your skin as being good for you. We're talking about a we proposition, not a me proposition. This is about the people that are growing the crops. Pesticide Action Network has identified that 10,000 people a year die from pesticide and defoliant and insecticide exposure. With something like organic certification in place, those farm workers are no longer at risk.
You know, that's actually such an important point, and I don't think, I'm not sure if you know this, Adam, but nearly half of the clothing made in the world is made from conventional cotton. Cotton is 2.5% of the world's agricultural land use, and it produces, though, 24% of the world's insecticides. So 24% of the world's insecticides are used on cotton fields, and it's just really, really, really toxic.
I did not know that.
There are even poisons like Aldecarb, which is cotton's best-selling insecticide, and it happens to be the most acutely poisonous to humans, and one drop of Aldecarb absorbed through the skin is enough to kill an adult.
Thank you, Matt. The other point that I wanted to bring up is that fair trade certification brings a sense of a voice, literally, to the person that's within that supply chain, and ensures that there is safe and participatory environments for people to work in. The thing that Indigenous is doing that is truly a breakthrough, and we're very proud of this innovation, is we're using something called the Fair Trace Tool. And this is an idea of sending in questions and directly speaking with the supply chain. So we're able to send in questions and ask, so Adam, how are you actually doing? Do you feel like you're working in a safe environment? And we're doing it through SMS technology, which is through cell phones. And it's amazing to think that most of the people that are in what they call the BOP, the base of the pyramid, actually own a cell phone. Not necessarily a smartphone like you and I might own, but at least they can actually receive texts. So we can send these important questions into them, and we can actually figure out how they're doing on the poverty line. And you might ask yourself, how do we do that? Well, we work with the Grameen Foundation, and they have created something called the Out of Poverty Index questions that are a set of 12 to 14 questions that will allow us to know where a person sits and a community lies against that poverty line. Questions like, do you own a refrigerator? Which tell us a lot more than if you own a refrigerator. It tells us that you have electricity where you live. It tells us that you're thinking about meal planning. And it also tells us that you're purchasing larger ticket items. So these questions are indicators, and we can actually bring that information back into aggregate and then figure out how our communities are doing. What's beautiful is that we're able to not just share that information internally with, say, the workforce within the supply chain or with people at Indigenous that work here, but we're actually able to share that with the consumer via every single hang tag that we have has a QR code. So when you scan that QR code, you get some of this information. You get to learn about the artisan who made the product. You get to learn about the geographical area, and again, the community in which we're impacting.
Now, this is really interesting. So you're basically giving a voice to these very voiceless, faceless people that have been, you know, working away on actually creating the textiles. And actually, for me as an end consumer, I can pick up a piece of clothing, and you're saying through this QR code, I can actually find out about the actual person that made my shirt?
Absolutely. What we're trying to do, we worked for almost 2 years developing this technology so that we could find a way to directly engage with consumers while they're shopping and create an emotional connection to the people that actually make the clothes that we wear on a daily basis, and open up curiosity so that hopefully consumers start asking more questions about where their dollar goes that they spend, and specifically in the things that we do in our daily actions. And, you know, for example, you know, when you scan the trace tool, you not only get to see a world map of where the fibers were grown and come from, but you also get imagery or video testimonial from the actual knitters or knitting groups that make the clothing, and then we share the social return on the investment through what Scott was mentioning, the Grameen Out of Poverty Index questions. And today we're extremely proud that in our Indigenous supply chain right now at or below the national poverty line was just 3% of our supply chain. So 97% have risen above that poverty line.
That's really wonderful. And so what do you attribute that to? Is that, I'm sure it begins with where you source textile manufacturers from, but is it actually through working with companies like Indigenous that they're able to pull people up?
Well, it wasn't always like this. The statistics that Matt is sharing has been a journey. We have been doing this for well over 15 years, and it's taken quite a while to bring the sophistication of the quality control with the textiles and to really elevate, in general, just the skills and the ability to create things on time and to bring what we would call financial literacy into all of these groups. We work with over 200 independent groups, bring them together to bring the actual fashion into market. And that fashion has made it into places like Bloomingdale's and Saks Fifth Avenue and Neiman Marcus and over 500 premium boutiques across the United States. So it's really been a journey that has slowly but surely brought the entire supply chain up, and it's risen to the point where the statistics are very very overwhelming.
Okay, so just how I'm picturing this in my mind, you've really taken on an industry which was, you know, sort of well known for, or at least had a reputation for, perhaps being a little bit exploitative with the communities which it contracted with to manufacture its product, then sold them, you know, at retail for the highest margin possible, without really that much regard for the actual individuals or communities where the textiles were sourced. You've now sort of turned that on its head, where you are using the purchasing power of these retailers to bring money into communities in a way that takes into account the rights of the people that are making the product, helps basically build an economic foundation for that that village or that area. You're strengthening the area, which obviously it strengthens the base of the pyramid that you mentioned, enabling them to make even better products, and in bringing those to market in a way where I, as a customer, can go in and actually not just feel like I'm buying a shirt, but feel like I'm buying a shirt and actually strengthening the global community at the same time. Is that accurate?
That's right. Absolutely. For sure. And I think you're making a good, really good point too. It is the consumer that drives the activity. I think it's up to brands to be responsible about how they produce, but cutting to the chase, 1,000 mostly young women would still be alive today in Bangladesh if we had fair trade practices in place or this fair trace tool that Matt and I are really trying to get out there and encourage other brands to even participate and use.
You know, that's actually an important point that, Adam, you should know about. You know, I had mentioned we had spent almost 2 years developing this proprietary fair trace tool, which we saw as initially not only the right thing to do, but it also was a competitive advantage. But in light of the tragedy in Bangladesh, we recently put out an open letter to the industry saying that we really wanted to share the fair trace tool and not hold on to it and allow others to bring transparency to their supply chain if they wanted to, you know, shift the way the industry works, and not just in the fashion, but we are offering it to any manufacturer, whether in food or whether in textiles, you name it, that wants to share with their consumer how things are done if they're doing it in a socially and equitable and responsible way.
And what kind of response from the industry have you seen?
Well, we were really touched. We ended up getting picked up in, Scott, what was it, 750 radio stations last week. We've been in numerous publications. We actually were just in the May edition of Apparel Magazine. We're awarded the top 40 innovators in the apparel industry.
Well, I think the response that Adam, you might be referring to is how did people in the industry accept the challenge and the open letter and the invitation to come in and work with us, and you know, we're humbled by the fact that, you know, we've gotten dozens of inquiries as to how we could possibly put this Fair Trace tool to use within their supply chain, including people like Alter Eco out of San Francisco that is actually a food company. And they're definitely in the space, and they want to find ways to really bring their story onto a platform and share with consumers the impact that is being made when consumers actually purchase their products that are both fair trade and organic.
Well, that's great to hear about the response. And for those listening, I did see the challenge that was issued by Indigenous to the larger industry. And it's a very bold statement, which I think is to your credit, where through use of the Fair Trace tool, or I'm sure you invite other tools that would be used for the same purpose, you basically invite the members of the apparel community to declare that no one should have to suffer and die to produce the clothes we wear, which I think is just a great sort of operating statement. And I imagine it's probably hard for some of the largest brands just to jump on that bandwagon with the massive complexity they have in their supply chains. But it's great that we have organizations out there like you guys that are driving people to that level of transparency and to that type of visible commitment to, you know, the holistic set of stakeholders in the process here.
Thank you, Adam.
Think that it's a commitment. It's the complexity of supply chain. When we talk about that, I think there's not many supply chains that are more complex than ours, actually, when it comes to all the different touch points and the quality control that has to take place. I think it just comes down to the mentality of profits versus people's lives and livelihoods and the environment, and whether corporations are willing to step in. We do have partners like Eileen Fisher that are very akin to what we do, and actually we do some private label for them. So there are larger corporations and larger brands out there in the apparel industry that are working with us and working independently that do the right thing.
And, you know, I just want to highlight what Scott said about it is the consumer that can drive the needle forward. And if we truly believe that if people knew more about how their clothing was made, they would be willing to pay more for something that treated humans with dignity and respected the planet. I don't think people realize that there can be as many as 8,000 chemicals used to make one item of clothing. I think people don't also realize that a typical garment lasts on average around 6 months in a person's closet. There's 1,400 gallons of water going into a pair of jeans and about 800 gallons going into a t-shirt. We throw away on average 6,000 pounds of clothing per year per person. It's just a unbelievably unsustainable industry, in the textile industry, and we hope that by bringing more awareness and transparency to it, people will look for alternative ways, not just Indigenous, there are other fair trade and organic brands out there, but looking for ways to pass your dollar on to socially just trading systems and ways to impact people's lives and not harm the planet. And for us too, first and foremost, like Scott mentioned, we are hanging in Nordstrom's, we're hanging in veteran boutiques. You don't have to sacrifice your style to do the right thing.
Well, I love that. And one of the things we talk a lot about here at Peak Prosperity and Resilient Life is the importance of models, of seeing pioneers blazing a new trail that help us understand what's possible. Because in a lot of cases, we have a certain set of behaviors or a certain narrative playing in our minds that we just accept as the way it is. And then when somebody is able to, you know, through innovation or through taking risk, show that there's actually a different way to do things that might actually be better. It's different, but better than the course that we're on. It gives us the inspiration or the courage to actually change our own behavior. I think in your case that, you know, it sounds like you're definitely modeling a better supply chain for the industry. And, you know, the more people that the more consumers that begin to make a conscious decision about sourcing their clothes and where they come from, they're very visible models, if you will, of, you know, a different way to basically relate to your clothes that hopefully other people will start following when they see people wearing these designs. And on that end, if I'm an interested listener, I've enjoyed this conversation here, I'd like to learn more about fair trade, or I'd like to be more conscious in making my decision on piece of clothing I'm going to buy the next time I walk into a store, what would your advice be to that person?
What I would say is that it is indeed a journey to, you know, an awakening, if you will, to start to educate yourself. And there's a lot of ways to do that just online. But, when I think about different purchases that we can make, it's not just only about fashion or even fair trade and organic. I think it's about just knowing where all of our products and gizmos and gadgets come from and the people that are affected by our purchases. I will also say that, you know, as a population, we're somewhere around, 4.4% of the population in the world.
We being Americans?
Yeah, in the United States. And we consume over 30% of the apparel in the world. So we're consuming at a very rapid pace compared to a lot of other cultures. And to be aware of that, maybe less consumption as opposed to more and better consumption. And the other aspect of this is what I would say, I would point people to B Corp, and to go to that website to look at a rating system that looks at a whole slew of corporations that are doing business the right way. And they've been pre-qualified and filtered, so it's an easy way for consumers to really understand that they're looking at best-in-class green practices as opposed to just green marketing or greenwashing.
Great. And that's B Corp, B as in boy, corp.com?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Great. And Matt, I think I interrupted you there. Were you
going
to add
to
that?
Okay. I was just going to, for somebody who's curious and listening, you know, and maybe doesn't know what fair trade standards are, what fair trade is, and how it applies to indigenous, I can just, quickly read off to you what fair trade is. We provide fair wages in the local context, support safe, healthy, and participatory workplaces, supply financial and technical support, as well as shared community planning to build capacity, ensure environmental sustainability, including using organic certified cotton, GOTS, or Global Organic Textile Standard Processing, and Oikotex 100 proof dyes. That means our dyes use very little to no heavy metals or azo-dioxin-free. We respect and embrace cultural identity of families and community, build direct and long-term relationships, and educate and collaborate with partners on sustainability. So that's how we define fair trade.
Great. And those sound like great guiding principles for, I think, really any industry, not just the retail industry.
Yeah. Recent National Consumer League poll actually indicated that 94% of American consumers feel that the treatment of workers who make the products they buy is very important to them. And, it's an interesting statistic, but when asked if they actually really know how the workers were treated in the products they buy, very, 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 very small percentage actually understand that or know and uncover that. And by bringing transparency to the industry, we really hope to answer that call from consumers.
All right, and from the consumer side, you said you don't have to sacrifice design or fashion. You don't have to sacrifice product quality. Where does this fall in on the cost side of the equation? Is it more expensive, about the same?
We've done deep competitive analysis of other brands that we aspire to be like, or larger brands that are in the fashion space. And by design, Indigenous is a premium brand. However, when compared to other premium brands in the space that are not organic or fair trade, believe it or not, we actually come out at the same price, or in some cases up to 30% under. So we feel that we can be competitive. We may not have the highest margins in the fashion industry, but that is part of our mission. but we definitely are a profitable business, and we're able to sustain ourselves and grow, and we've been growing over the last 5 years in some of the worst financial times. So we believe that it's a very viable business model.
And we sleep well at night.
And we sleep well at night.
Yeah.
And our customers sleep well at night.
So let me see, if I'm a retail customer here, again, I'm going in to buy a piece of clothing, and I feel like I can get the look I want at good quality, perhaps maybe even better quality than just sort of the mass-produced factory clothing that's out there. And it's not costing me more. As you said, it might even be saving me a little bit of money. Boy, I can't really imagine why anybody wouldn't want to do this.
Exactly. Fashion and look is definitely drives the market, and that's why we really, really put a lot of energy and effort and resources into design at Indigenous to ensure that, and quality. And I love that you bring up quality, because I believe just the inherent nature of a handcrafted garment, because many of our garments are handcrafted, surpasses the quality of most. The actual artisans that make our clothes, many of them have skills passed down for hundreds and hundreds of years. They are the top of class expert knitters. And where we go in is help them through bringing maybe more contemporary Western design knowledge to them and more stringent quality control standards in terms of fit guidelines. And we share that with them openly. And not only does that allow us to pay them a higher and more premium wage, but allows them on the open market to be more desirable. Because everyone we work with, we really like them to be independent knitters and free on the open market to do as they please. And we're happy, though, because of that philosophy. We also have an incredibly dedicated and loyal group of knitters. We now work with over 1,500 artisans throughout South America today that we're employing through fair trade and organic practices.
Oh, well, that's just fantastic. Well, guys, I want to thank you for your time and thank you for the model that you're setting. I really look forward to hearing what type of continued participation and reaction you get from the industry around the challenge that you've issued. And I really encourage those listening to check out Fair Trade, to use it as a consideration factor next time you go to the store to buy some clothes. And Matt and Scott, for those that are interested in learning more about Indigenous, where should they go?
They can go to indigenous.com. That's INDIGENOUS.com. And we have a lot of information on our site. We try to give do an informational blog regularly. We also are on Facebook, and we also even have a direct retail site online as well. And Adam, thank you so much for, you know, bringing Indigenous to your Peak Prosperity listeners, and we're really honored to be part of this forum.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thanks so much again.
You bet.